Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a deeper look into stories from our radio newsrooms across the country. Today, On Deadline is looking for answers to questions that have been left looming following President-elect Donald Trump's sweeping victory in the 2024 presidential election. America has spoken and delivered Trump both the popular vote and an electoral college victory, so concerns about election integrity or vote-rigging accusations bringing violence don't seem to be a factor like they were back in 2020. Still, a lot remains to be seen about how the newly elected president will answer some of the world's biggest questions. These include uncertainty about reproductive rights, the ongoing situation on the southern border, multiple global conflicts, and everyone's favorite issue, the economy. Trump did tackle these issues while campaigning, although he sometimes gave different answers in different speeches. So what we can really expect from the incoming administration remains a bit up in the air, especially now that Republicans have secured the Senate, House of Representatives, and the White House. For example, the issue of abortion. In 2021, a majority of the U.S. Supreme Court, including three justices appointed by Trump himself, overturned decades of protections on abortion access. Vice President-elect J.D. Vance has said that his boss wouldn't sign a national abortion ban should it come to his desk. And the former president has seemed to support this as well. But during his debate with Vice President Kamala Harris, Trump said that he wouldn't commit to vetoing such a ban and instead argued that he wouldn't have to. His wife, former First Lady Melania Trump, recently shared in her memoir that she supports a woman's right to choose. She called it a fundamental right. So here come the questions. Could members of Trump's party persuade him to sign a federal ban if it gets through Congress? Or will Trump continue to support the Supreme Court's decision to leave it up to the states? Naomi Kahn, a law professor and an expert in family law, feminist jurisprudence, and reproductive rights at the University of Virginia, discussed this last week.
Well, let's start with breaking down Tuesday's election results, specifically in the states that had abortion on the ballot. What did we see?
Well, what we saw, there were 10 states with abortion on the ballot, and what we saw was that in 7 of those states, voters cast ballots to support abortion rights in their state constitutions. And so those 7 states were New York, Maryland, Colorado, Arizona, Montana, and surprise, surprise, Missouri, as well as Nevada. So those were the 7 states where abortion measures, ballot measures to enshrine abortion rights in the state constitutions passed. On the other hand, there were 3 states where abortion measures didn't pass. One of them was Florida, where a majority of voters voted in favor of adding support for abortion to the Constitution, but they just missed reaching the 60% that it would take for voters to approve it. So it failed in Florida. It also failed in Nebraska as well as in South Dakota. So those are the 10 states where it was on the ballot. So a 70% win. And if you look at Florida, where, as I said, a majority approved, almost 8 of the 10 states where it was on the ballot, it did in fact win. Seven states moving forward. Nevada is a bit more complicated because there will have to be another vote, but still, it passed.
Missouri is especially interesting. I mean, a red state, it went for Trump,
and yet
it overturned these restrictions.
Absolutely. Missouri, which I have to say is where I grew up, is a red state. And definitely all kinds of roadblocks put in the way of trying to get this amendment to the Constitution passed. And yet in Missouri, I think showing the strength of the support in states for abortion and showing reactions to the Supreme Court's opinion in 2022, which said there's no federal right, there's still a record in virtually all, except for three states, where abortion has been on the ballot, then abortion has been approved. And yes, that's true in Missouri. It's also true in Kansas, another red state, and Arizona, which is a battleground state, and Montana, another red state. So really fascinating to see what happens when you put abortion on the ballot. It's also interesting to think about, so even in the deep red states where abortion won, so voters could vote for abortion rights and also vote for the person, Donald Trump, who put justices on the Supreme Court that overturned the federal right to an abortion. So an interesting phenomenon indeed.
Absolutely. Trump, a man of contradictions. I mean, his appointment to the Supreme Court led to the overturning of Roe v. Wade, but then he has also said that he won't enact an abortion ban. What other things has he said? What should we believe?
I'm not sure what to believe. He has had various statements on just what he would do with respect to abortion, including the most recent one that he would not advocate for a national abortion ban. It will be interesting to see, because it looks like Republicans certainly have control of the Senate, and it looks like they might also have control of the House. So it will be interesting to see what additional abortion restrictions land on President Trump's desk. And we'll see how he reacts to whatever additional restrictions that Congress tries to put into federal law. So we can expect that Congress will take some actions with respect to abortion. And then there are also a whole series of other things that the federal government can do, either to make abortion more available or, as is anticipated, to make it increasingly more difficult to get an abortion.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
As we touched on in yesterday's episode of On Deadline, President-elect Trump gained a lot of support from Americans who felt the economy was the top issue this election season, and that he was the right person to fix it. On the campaign trail, he promised no taxes on tips or Social Security, an expansion of corporate and individual tax breaks, tariffs on foreign imports to create more American manufacturing jobs, and even free IVF treatments. But he never really outlined the nitty-gritty details of how he plans to pay for all of these promises. To share more on the impact Trump's policies might have on our everyday lives, Walter Dubb Lane, an associate professor of economics and finance at UNO, joined Odyssey.
I want to talk about the economy a little bit in general, because I know they say, I've seen a lot of analyses after the election, and they said it's the economy stupid, and quoted James Carville and so forth. Again, maybe I'm out of touch, so I don't really know. Is the economy in a terrible shape? Is it in good shape? I know the 401k is doing well, but I don't know if I'm typical or atypical.
Well, actually, by the measures that economists use, the economy's in really pretty good shape right now. The GDP is growing. The gross domestic product is growing, meaning the economy is growing at a reasonable rate, around 3%. The unemployment rate is below the 4.5%, a little bit lower, higher in Louisiana. This month, the new jobs are down, but we think that's because of some temporary figures. So job creation is going pretty good, and the inflation rate is down closer to 2%, which is their target. What people are experiencing is not what inflation means, how fast prices are growing now. What people are experiencing is the inflation over the last 3 years. And so prices are higher. They're not going to go back down, but they're leveling off. But because, unless you're my age, most of the people have never experienced inflation since the 1980s. So now this is their only experience, and it just has captured their mind, and they can't think of anything else, is the only way I can figure it. But I think Trump is very lucky in the sense that going forward, he's going to look real good, at least for a while, although he's done nothing that I can see to lower inflation. In fact, most of his policies will probably push it up higher. But again, he's going to get the benefit of the fact that the Fed has kind of pretty much conquered inflation.
And that's the other question I wanted to ask you. When it comes to presidents, whether it's Trump or Biden or Grover Cleveland, pick one, I don't care. Is it kind of like a college football program where the incoming president maybe is really riding on what happened before, be it good or bad, by the previous administration?
Yeah, I mean, football is if the last guy has recruited a bunch of good players and you walk into that, you've got a good chance of doing well. But, yeah, it's the same thing, yes. A lot of what happens in inflation now is determined, I mean, the inflation we had was determined by three things. One was the flood of consumer spending after COVID. People were in pit up for 2 years, and then they went crazy afterwards. The second one is because of what's happening with the oil prices due to what's happening in Ukraine, which drove everything up. And the third one was the huge government spending, which certainly Biden is responsible for, but so was Trump. Trump ran huge deficits in his first term. So in other words, Biden inherited all of that, only some of which was his fault.
So if somebody were to look ahead to the next election and not get caught up in the last 3 weeks of what's going on or the last 6 months of what's going on, I understand that inflation is bad. First of all, as it relates to the rate of inflation, for people that perhaps voted for President Trump thinking that prices were going to come down, is that likely to happen?
No, prices aren't going to come down. They're growing right now at about 2.5% per year, which is what they've been doing for the last 20, 30 years. And people don't really notice 2.5% per year. Their target is 2%. They're not quite there yet. But they'll probably be announcing a rate reduction in the interest rate today, meaning they're confident that it's going to be kind of almost under control. But prices are not going to come down. You'll see oil prices have. Oil prices have already come down. They tend to be volatile. Food prices should level off, but I don't see them coming back down.
Then there's maybe the biggest question we still have after this election. What is going to happen with Trump's legal cases? For those who've lost count, the president-elect was facing two federal charges, one over his handling of classified documents, and another over his efforts to overturn the 2020 election. He was also found guilty in a New York hush money case and has yet to be sentenced. Oh, and he's also facing RICO charges in Georgia over his efforts to overturn election results in that state in 2020. ABC's Stephen Portnoy painted a clearer picture of what might happen with Trump's legal troubles last week.
What happens to the federal criminal cases against him?
Well, it's a great question. We don't know all the answers. In fact, we're trying to figure it all out. But because we're in uncharted waters, There has never been a president elected of the United States who, for example, is scheduled to appear before a New York State Supreme Court judge in Manhattan on November 26 for sentencing, having been convicted by a jury. Well, Judge Juan Merchan is going to have to figure out what to do. And that's just the New York hush money case. Set that aside for a moment. There's also the Georgia racketeering case, which will have to be resolved in some way. And then there's the two federal cases which we can dive into now. There's the January 6th federal election interference case here in Washington, D.C., and there is the Florida case involving classified documents, which is before the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, because Judge Eileen Cannon dismissed it on a constitutional basis. When it comes to those two cases overseen by Special Counsel Jack Smith, sources tell us at ABC News that there are ongoing internal conversations within the Biden Justice Department about how to wind those two federal cases down. Officials cite the long-standing Justice Department policy dating to Richard Nixon's presidency that a sitting commander-in-chief has responsibilities under the Constitution that are so important that he can't be prosecuted while he's in office. So, we understand, talks are underway here in Washington about winding those two federal cases down. Exactly how to do it remains an open question. So let's see what happens.
Here's another big question. What does newly re-elected President Trump plan to do on day one? It's a question that's been bandied about since November 5th by pundits, members of Congress, and others who are gazing into their imaginary crystal balls to try and read the intentions of a man who even his supporters would have to agree doesn't always stay on a predictable course of action. Democrats are tearing out their hair about billionaire Elon Musk's sudden presence on the political scene, where he seems to be making decisions that could affect all Americans without being in an elected role or having any experience. And then he also has the ability to glorify himself via the Twitter/X algorithm. But what Musk will actually do and how long his alliance will endure with the famously changeable Trump is still unknown. What we do know is that Trump has already added an assorted cast of characters to his leadership team, and more names are flying in every day. From proposed Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem, the South Dakota governor many remember as the woman who proudly admitted that she killed her own puppy, to rumored Secretary of State pick Marco Rubio, who once mocked Trump's so-called tiny hands and called his rallies frightening, grotesque, and disturbing. There's also Stephen Miller. He's credited with attempting to enact a Muslim travel ban during Trump's first term, and he's also associated with the policy of child separation at the southern border. To get a sense of Miller and his demeanor, know that on Election Day, he wrote this on X. "Illegals are raping and murdering American children. All the men of America need to fulfill their duty, get to the voting booth, and end the invasion once and for all." And then there's the guy Trump has named as his border czar, Tom Homan. He recently spoke at a rally called the Rod of Iron Festival next to a man wearing a crown made out of AK-47 bullets dipped in gold. Do Homan and Miller as Trump's first picks mean mass deportations are really on the agenda for day one? If they are, where would the apparatus come from to make it happen? Not to mention the dollars, the holding facilities, and the agreements about where to deport people to. Or maybe the tax policies are going to come first. Or reproductive rights, healthcare, or court appointments. Maybe something else. All we can do to try to find real answers to these questions is look to the words of the people who are back in power. Homan, for instance, said in a recent interview that he'll run the biggest deportation operation this country's ever seen. Another day one promise came from anti-vaxxer Robert F. Kennedy Jr., a former independent presidential candidate who's now part of Trump's transition team. He promised to fire and replace 600 people from the National Institutes of Health on day one. So could Trump do both on January 21st, slash government jobs and round up illegal immigrants by the millions? Again, we only know what he and his team has said. Trump himself has identified two major initiatives that he has on his agenda for day one. "I want to close the border and I want to drill, drill, drill," said our future president. This show is produced by Joe Heady, Christy Strausser, and by me. I'm Lauren Berry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline, Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.